All right, so today we are going to dive into a world that might seem deceptively simple at first, like we're talking about, just lines on a grid.
Yeah, it can appear that way, but trust me, there's a whole lot more going on beneath the surface.
I'm excited to unpack that with you. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Always up for a deep dive into some fascinating math.
So for the listeners today, we're taking a close look at a recent breakthrough in a very specific area of mathematics. And it has to do with these things called self-avoiding walks. And we're going to get into exactly what those are. But the exciting part is that this result, which mathematicians have been wrestling with for decades, actually confirms a prediction that physicists made almost half a century ago. It's a fantastic example of how these two seemingly distinct fields can come together to illuminate some fundamental truths about the universe.
Yeah, I love when those connections pop up, and this one is particularly elegant.
For this deep dive, we are relying on a highly technical paper by two brilliant mathematicians, Hugo Dumino-Kopin and Stanislav Smirnov. And they lay out this intricate proof, but we're going to try to make it understandable for, everyone.
Yeah, we can definitely peel back the layers and get to the heart of what makes this result so special.
All right. Mission for this deep dive: to untangle this groundbreaking proof and explore why it even matters. So, ready to jump in?
Absolutely, let's do it.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. When we say self-avoiding walks, what exactly are we picturing?
All right. Imagine you have a grid, like, a honeycomb pattern or even just a simple square grid. A self-avoiding walk is a path that you trace along the lines of this grid, but with one very important rule: you can never cross your own path.
So it's like a maze, but you're creating the maze as you go and can't go back over your steps.
That's a great way to put it. It's
Yeah.
like a constantly evolving maze where every new step has to lead to uncharted territory.
Okay, got it. And why are mathematicians and even physicists so interested in these, seemingly simple walks?
Well, they turn out to be a remarkably powerful tool for modeling all sorts of real-world phenomena. One of those prominent applications is in polymer chemistry. Polymers, those long chains of molecules that make up everything from plastics to DNA, can be thought of as a self-avoiding walk in 3D space. They can't occupy the same space, just like the lines can't intersect.
So these walks on a flat grid are like a simplified representation of how these long chain-like molecules might be jiggling around in a solution. They're bumping into themselves and into other molecules, so their path becomes like this self-avoiding walk.
That's the idea. And by studying these walks on different types of lattices, we can actually learn something fundamental about how polymers behave in different environments.
So we have our grids, we have these walks, and now we need to start asking some interesting mathematical questions.
Exactly. And one of the most natural questions you might ask is, how many different self-avoiding walks are there of a certain length on a given lattice?
So, like, if I'm only allowed to take, say, 10 steps, how many possible paths can I draw on this grid without crossing myself?
Precisely. And as you might expect, that number explodes very quickly as you allow for more and more steps.
I can imagine. You start with just a few choices, but then with each step, your options multiply.
And this leads to one of the key concepts in the study of self-avoiding walks, the connective constant. This constant captures the rate at which the number of possible walks grows as you increase the number of steps.
So it's telling us something about how these walks are able to spread out and explore the lattice as they get longer.
Yeah, exactly. If the connective constant is higher, it means there are more possibilities for each new step as the walk progresses. The walk is, on average, more connected to new, unvisited spots on the lattice.
Makes sense. Now, this is where things get even more interesting, and we start to see the connection between the world of mathematics and the world of physics.
Right. Back in the early 80s, a physicist named B. Niehaus made a prediction about the exact value of this connective constant for a specific type of lattice, the hexagonal lattice, the honeycomb.
And he's using these sophisticated techniques from statistical mechanics, right?
Yeah, involving this Coulomb gas approach, which is a whole other deep dive we could do sometime. But the point is, he predicted that the connective constant for self-avoiding walks on the hexagonal lattice should be exactly 2 plus the square root of 2.
So a pretty specific number, not just some vague range, but a precise value.
And this prediction, while incredibly compelling from a physics perspective, wasn't a rigorous mathematical proof. It relied on certain assumptions and approximations that, while very reasonable in the physical world, didn't satisfy mathematicians' need for absolute certainty.
So enter the world of hardcore mathematical proof, and this is where Dumino-Kopin and Smirnov come in. They set out to actually prove this prediction rigorously. And they did it using some very clever and, I'd say, beautiful mathematics.
Absolutely. It's a tour de force of mathematical ingenuity.
So this is where we need to, you know, roll up our sleeves a bit and try to untangle some of the key ideas in their proof.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we'll keep things as accessible as possible.
Of course. We'll use analogies and try to paint a picture of the core concepts without getting too bogged down in the technical details.
Sounds good. So where do we even begin?
Well, the heart of their proof revolves around a rather exotic mathematical object called a parafermionic observable. Now, that might sound intimidating.
It kind of does.
But think of it this way. Imagine you're trying to study these self-avoiding walks, right? But instead of just looking at them directly, you decide to use a special kind of lens. This lens, the parafermionic observable, has the remarkable property of revealing hidden patterns and relationships in the way these walks behave on the hexagonal lattice.
Okay, so this lens is like a mathematical tool that highlights certain aspects of the walks that we wouldn't be able to see otherwise.
Precisely. And one of the crucial features of this parafermionic observable is that it satisfies a mathematical relationship called a discrete Cauchy-Riemann relation, or at least half of it.
Okay, now we're getting into some serious math terminology. What do those relations mean in simple terms?
Well, in the world of continuous functions, these relations describe functions that are very smooth and predictable. They have this nice property that their behavior in one direction is tightly linked to their behavior in the perpendicular direction. Think of it like the flow of water, smooth and predictable, without any sudden jumps or discontinuities. In the discrete setting of our hexagonal lattice, this half Cauchy-Riemann relation is still a powerful indicator of some underlying order and smoothness in the system.
Okay. So it's like saying there's a certain balance in the way these walks spread out on the lattice, and this parafermionic observable helps us see that balance.
You got it. Now, another key ingredient they use is the idea of weighting the walks based on their winding.
Winding, like how much they turn left or right as they go.
That's exactly it. They introduce a way to assign a weight to each self-avoiding walk, and that weight depends on how many left turns versus right turns the walk makes.
So walks that twist and turn a lot would have a different weight than walks that are relatively straight.
Exactly. And the specific way they calculate this weight involves a mathematical factor with a particular angle, denoted as sigma. And in their proof, the crucial value for this angle is 5/8 of a full turn.
5/8 seems pretty specific. Why that particular value?
It turns out that with this specific choice of angle, when combined with a critical value for another parameter, which, spoiler alert, is related to our connective constant, they can derive a very important local relationship at each point where the lines of the honeycomb meet each vertex.
Okay, so they're focusing on what's happening at each of those little junctions.
Yeah, and this is where the magic starts to happen. They essentially show that with this special angle and this critical value for that other parameter, the way the parafermionic observable behaves at the midpoints of the three lines coming into a vertex is perfectly balanced. They add up to zero.
So a kind of perfect equilibrium at each of these points.
Precisely. And this local balance is the linchpin of their proof.
Okay, but how do we go from this local balance to a global statement about the connective constant, which, remember, is all about the overall growth rate of these walks on the entire lattice?
Right. Good question. So to bridge that gap, they consider the self-avoiding walks confined to a long strip of the hexagonal lattice. Imagine a long, narrow honeycomb.
So kind of like constraining the walks to stay within a certain lane.
Exactly. Now, here's where that local balance at each vertex becomes super powerful. By summing up that local balance over all the vertices within this strip, all those contributions from the interior of the strip cancel each other out perfectly. You're only left with contributions from the edges of the strip.
Clever. So they're using the fact that everything inside balances out to isolate what's happening at the boundaries.
Precisely. And now they introduce some more mathematical machinery, something called partition functions. These are basically a way of counting all the possible self-avoiding walks within that strip that start at one end and end at different parts of the other end or the sides.
So like categorizing the walks by where they end up.
Yeah. And using their parafermionic observable and that crucial local balance property, they derive an equation that links these partition functions at that specific critical value of the parameter we talked about earlier.
The one connected to the connective constant.
Yep, that's the one. And here's the punchline. By analyzing the behavior of these partition functions as the strip gets infinitely long, they can show that the number of possible self-avoiding walks explodes if that parameter is even slightly larger than the critical value.
So, too many possibilities, the system breaks down.
Yeah, it becomes overconnected. And if the parameter is smaller than that critical value, the number of walks stays finite. So this critical value is the exact tipping point between having a finite number of long walks and an infinite number.
And because that parameter is directly related to the connective constant, they've essentially nailed down its precise value, which turns out to be exactly what the physicists predicted, 2 plus the square root of 2.
Exactly. It's a beautiful example of a prediction from physics being rigorously confirmed by a completely different approach from the world of mathematics.
Truly remarkable. Now, their achievement has implications beyond just proving this one number, right?
Absolutely. It opens up new avenues for research. One of the really exciting directions is understanding the more intricate details of how these walks behave at very large scales.
You mean going beyond just how fast the number of walks grows and looking at, like, the typical shape or how far a walk tends to stray from its starting point?
Exactly. Physicists have made incredibly precise conjectures about these finer details involving things called critical exponents.
Now, these exponents sound familiar from other areas of physics and math, like the study of phase transitions in critical phenomena.
Precisely. These exponents describe the power law corrections to that dominant exponential growth we were talking about. For example, there's an exponent called gamma, which is conjectured to be 4,3,3,2 for these self-avoiding walks on a hexagonal lattice. It would tell you how the average size of the walk, like how much it spreads out, scales with the number of steps.
So it gives you a more nuanced picture of the walk's behavior beyond just the overall growth rate.
Exactly. And then there's another exponent, nu, conjectured to be 34, which describes how the average distance the walk travels from its starting point scales with the number of steps. So you see, there's this whole rich world of finer details that we're still trying to fully understand.
It's like we've zoomed out and seen the big picture, but now we're zooming back in to explore the intricate patterns within that big picture.
That's a great analogy. And a lot of the current research in this area is focused on trying to rigorously prove these conjectured values for these critical exponents. And one of the really tantalizing ideas is that there might be a connection between these self-avoiding walks and a very special class of continuous curves called Schramm Lohner evolutions, or SLEs.
SLEs. Those sound familiar. I think I've heard you mention those before on the show.
Yeah, they're a very powerful mathematical tool for studying random curves that have a special property called conformal invariance. Basically, it means their shape stays essentially the same even when you stretch or squeeze them in a way that preserves angles. Think of it like a rubber sheet. You can deform it, but the angles between lines drawn on it remain the same.
So these SLEs are like the superstars of the random curve world.
In a way, yes. And there's a specific type of SLE called SLE with parameter 83, SLE 83, that physicists believe is the scaling limit of self-avoiding walks.
Scaling limit? Meaning what?
Imagine you take a self-avoiding walk on a very fine hexagonal lattice, so the lines are super close together. Now zoom out. What you might start to see is that the walk, even though it's made of these discrete steps, starts to look more and more like a smooth, continuous curve. The idea is that if you keep refining the lattice and zooming out in the limit, you might end up with a curve that looks like an SLE 83.
That would be pretty amazing. And if that's true, if these self-avoiding walks really do converge to this special type of SLE, then those conjectured values for the critical exponents might actually be provable.
That's the hope. It's a major open problem in this field, sometimes called conjecture one. And Dumanil-Kopin and Smirnov suggest that their parafermionic observable, that special lens we talked about, might be the key to unlocking this conjecture.
So the same tool that helped them nail down the connective constant might also pave the way to understanding this deeper connection with SLEs.
Exactly. They have another conjecture, conjecture two, which gives a very precise prediction for what the scaling limit of this parafermionic observable should look like if it does indeed converge to something nice and smooth. And if that conjecture is true, it would provide very strong evidence for the SLE connection.
This is also fascinating. It really highlights how interconnected different areas of math and physics can be, from these seemingly simple self-avoiding walks to this incredibly rich theory of SLEs and conformal invariants.
Absolutely. And it's worth mentioning that this whole approach, while incredibly successful for the hexagonal lattice, doesn't quite work as smoothly for other lattices, like the square lattice.
Why is that? I mean, a square lattice seems even simpler than a honeycomb.
You'd think so, but it turns out that the hexagonal lattice has a certain symmetry, a threefold rotational symmetry at each vertex, that is crucial for making this whole parafermionic observable approach work. The square lattice doesn't have that same symmetry, and as a result, the connective constant for self-avoiding walks on a square lattice, believe it or not, is still unknown rigorously.
Wow, that's kind of mind-blowing that something that seems so basic is still an open question in mathematics.
Yeah, it just goes to show how deep and subtle these seemingly simple models can be.
Absolutely. So, big picture, our deep dive today has explored the first ever rigorous mathematical proof of the connective constant for self-avoiding walks on a hexagonal lattice. And what's so cool is that this confirms a prediction that physicists made nearly 50 years ago using completely different methods.
It's a beautiful example of how these two fields can complement and enrich each other.
Totally. And beyond the satisfaction of finally proving this number, the methods developed by Dumenkopf and Smirnov are already leading to new discoveries in related areas, and they have the potential to help crack some of the even bigger open problems, like proving those critical exponents and establishing the connection to SLEs.
It's an exciting time to be working in this field, that's for sure.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? How might these precise mathematical properties of self-avoiding walks, whether on a hexagonal lattice or some other structure, have implications in fields we haven't even considered yet? I mean, could there be connections to network science or information theory, or even something like the behavior of financial markets? It's amazing to think about how these seemingly abstract ideas from math can potentially shed light on such diverse aspects of the world around us.
That's the beauty of fundamental research. You never know where it might lead.
Exactly. And on that note, I think we've covered a lot of ground today, maybe even taken a few self-avoiding steps of our own through the world of mathematics and physics.
A good walk, I'd say.
So until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep those minds wandering. You never know what connections you might discover.
And who knows, maybe you'll even stumble upon the connective constant for the square lattice.
Now that would be a deep dive worth having.